Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And like always, I have a question for you. Do you derive power from an institution? You know, throughout life, we migrate from family to social networks to organizations and institutions, and governments and countries and so forth. And along the way, within these institutions, we develop political and survival skills. And often we become very attached and identified, even enamored with our teams, our companies, our religions, our political parties, and our tribes. Now, in today's broadcast, I'm going to lift the veil on what's behind institutional power. And I'm going to reveal the power that drives it, and I'm going to show you an amazing alternative. Join me now for this very challenging podcast that asks us to reframe everything in order to usher in the new world. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. Welcome back to another episode. Welcome to Sunday. So glad to have you here. I want to welcome you to the broadcast, welcome you to a new week. Hope that it's off to a very good start to you. Today, folks, we are going to dive in to some content that is probably going to be really stretching the framework of understanding for a lot of listeners. A lot of my content is like that. And I, of course, I want to produce something that you can actually think about. I don't want to insult your intelligence and be like many people out there, especially when they're talking about spiritual content, where they just aim for the sixth grader, aim for the fifth grade mentality. Why? Because most people, that's all they can really understand. I personally find that insulting. I wouldn't do that to you. I don't do that to you. And as a result, you do have to think a little bit in this content. But that's where we need to do. I kind of shoot above so that you can rise up, capture the information, and be transformed by a completely new perspective. And of course, this is all based in spirituality. But the application of today's content is not small. It's huge. And so I'm painting with a big brush. I'm using a huge wide angle lens. And so because so many people tend to have more of a myopic disposition or a bias, it's harder for them to see some of the things and to connect the dots here. But I'm going to do it. I've tried to lay it out. I've really condensed it from something that was much, much bigger. It probably needs multiple sections to discuss, but I'm going to do it, and I'm going to start it now. Today, it's called Institutional Power is Not What It Seems. Institutional power is not what it seems. Now, every religion has its own version of God. And likewise, atheism insists that their version of no God represents the truth, right? So everybody kind of has a perspective, and whether you're in a religion or you're not, in terms of atheism, you would see yourself as not, although atheism is very much like a religion of its own. See, tribal level people, or like Ken Wilber would say, people in the red stage or the lower consciousness stage of development, are very attracted to religion because things like religion provide a framework and they give you an identity, right? They tell you who you are. They index you. Even if it's only infrequently connecting you to God, so to speak, people become very attracted to religion. And oftentimes, the religious framework, the religion itself, becomes the surrogate which is worshipped and obeyed instead of the deity upon which the religion is actually based. Now, that's a nuance you may not have caught. You might just assume that because you're in a church, everybody's worshipping Jesus or Allah, or if you're in temple or mosque, you know, it's Yahweh or whatever it may be. You might just think that because you're all there and the deity is behind it, that that's what you're worshiping. But so much of your time, your effort, and your money is going into the framework and not that spiritual connection. And, you know, as people have evolved throughout history, we've had huge jumps in human consciousness. And as people are evolving into higher levels of consciousness, they've increasingly undertaken what I call the soul work of self-criticism. They're looking at themselves honestly. They're looking at their beliefs honestly and saying, ah, man, is that really true? Now, this has allowed modern people to gradually transcend many tribal beliefs and frameworks. And along the way, I mean, people have tried to find areas of common ground, right? I mean, let's just say, hey, well, you know, my religion kind of believes this ultimately, and yours kind of believes the same thing. And so they try and find common ground on the shared beliefs. And that has given rise to what we know as ecumenicalism. And you might have seen these kinds of bumper stickers of the Unitarian kind of faith systems where they say coexist on the bumper sticker, and it has all the symbols of all the different religions and so forth. Now, on the surface, ecumenicalism looks like progress. But in reality, each religion that it subscribes to really gravitates ultimately towards its distinctions rather than where it overlaps. Now, we can all come together in a group and talk about how we all say similar things and we can celebrate those overlaps. But if you hold towards your religion, if you protect it, if you really appreciate the nuances that's differentiated, then the bias towards distinction actually protects each religion from dissolving into something other than what it has historically been. And that's just the way a religion and institutions, they all do this. This is how they preserve their social and economic power. You may not be aware of that. This is a nuance that I've been talking with about religion, but I'm going to expand it, and it is applicable to all other institutions and organizations. And the dawn of quantum science has really expanded the claims of spirituality by reframing religion, primarily through the Eastern religions and their lens, but kind of reframing religion into a scientific language of the quantum world. And the rise of New Age spirituality really just stems from integration of science and spirituality. And it's provided a framework that brings a big number of really diverse seekers into the larger conversation. I mean, when people say, you know what, I'm not so convinced that my religion had it all right, I think there's a bigger story, the trend is to move into this kind of New Age mentality where we're not talking specifically about Allah or Yahweh or Jesus anymore, but we do all agree that this is a universal energy, a force. It's scientifically measurable, right? And you start to reevaluate and reframe everything in this kind of New Age language. And the tendency is to assume, hey, we're really progressing here. We're getting further. We're more advanced. And these trends do seem like they're integrating, right? They do seem like, hey, I used to be a Buddhist and I used to be a Christian and he used to be a Muslim and now we're all kind of together in this new space. But I'm not so sure that this is the integrated rise of consciousness that many of the gurus and adherents of this trend believe it to be. You see, it might really only be another veiled tribal belief system, which unfortunately separates the innies from outies. And that kind of begs the question as to how far we've actually evolved within our thinking. So it comes down to inclusivity. Like, who's in, who's out? I always use the great story from Dr. Seuss, which is really pronounced Dr. Souse. You can check that out. But he has a story called The Sneetches on the Beaches, and the star-bellied Sneetches are the best on the beaches. And then there's this machine that converts them all to star-bellied Sneetches if you didn't have a star, and so forth it goes. It's all about inclusivity. right? Institutional power is about who's in and who's out. And when somebody upholds a very particular framework of understanding, when you uphold a very, I am always going to be an Episcopalian. I'm Reformed. I'm not an Arminian, you know, whatever it may be. Your inclusivity becomes predicated upon the adoption of that institution's distinctives. So, you know, if you have a divergent belief, I mean, God forbid an Arminian show up at a Calvinistic church and try and, you know, take on a leadership responsibility. It'll just never happen. It creates an uncomfortable tension among those who just are not willing or able to relax their framework. Now, this really prioritizes compliance to the tribal particularity, right? I mean, once you're in, and we're all defined by the 25 things that we put on our website that makes our church unique, then you can't diverge from that, or else you're not really in anymore. It's not about taking your individual contribution, your unique gifting, your unique perspective, and allowing it to bless and inform everybody else. It's really about get rid of your unique perspective and adopt the perspective of the institution, the tribe. And this actually violates the law of love, which is the law of inclusion. So this is an interesting framework. Now, I'm using the example of how this takes place within churches and ministry, because that's the framework from which I've come from, but it's certainly applicable on everything down to your favorite sports team, your college, your work, your business, and all the things in between. You see, here comes a statement that you may not be ready to have, but I'm going to say it anyway. Exclusion is a hate crime empowered by institutional evil against the law of love. That's right. Exclusion is a hate crime empowered by institutional evil against the law of love. And so in this framework, this way of seeing it, a junior high clique is powered by the same but somewhat underdeveloped spiritual force as the Third Reich, as Hitler's realm of leadership. Think about it. It's all institutional power. I'm convinced, like it says in Matthew 4:8, that these are the kingdoms of the world that Satan offered Jesus during his temptation. I think Satan could give Jesus institutional power because it was his to give. And of course, Jesus denied that, saying, no, I'm not going to take that. And I think we're going back here because I really think we desperately need in our world to wake up and gain the eyes to see institutional power for what it really is. Now, we have this noble desire to kind of integrate with each other, to get along, right? Our world wants diversity and it wants unity, and it can never find a place where they both coexist, right? You either have diversity and then you have all this fighting, or you have unity and then you have no celebration of diversity. It's just too vanilla, right? And our integration tempts us to believe that our differences are really just surface-level semantics. And so long as we conclude that the discussion is really about words, then we may very well miss the subterranean darkness and the depth of our addiction to our distinctions. Yeah, that's an addiction, folks. We are stuck in a pattern of measuring, of indexing, of deciding who's in, who's out, who's worthy. We have a scorecard. You see, discerning differences is actually a good part of the Imago Dei. It's part of our ability to discern good from evil, but also good from better, right? It is a nice benefit tool of knowing good from evil, like we see in Genesis 3:22 after the fall. God looks at Adam and Eve and says, behold, they have become like one of us. See? So when discernment, though, is corrupted, when the knowledge of good and evil is corrupted, we use it to empower. We use our discernment to validate ourselves, to enlarge our self-image, right? You're going through a big meeting and you're looking at all the people and you're like, well, I'm taller than them. They're better looking than me. I'm, you know, stronger, I'm faster, I'm younger, I'm older, they're faster, they're better, they're smarter, they're more rich than I am. You know, this is a whole way we go about life. And like I said, the junior high world is not that different, is it? You see, the worst offenders are always birthed from within the tribe. The more discerning, the more critical, the more you have the scorecard, the more you know that that came from an institutional arrangement. And this means that institution's greatest devotion may actually be towards its distinctives, about what makes it it, which gives it power. And it's more so than giving devotion to the divine, which is supposed to be behind it all. And this makes institutional powers very idolatrous, especially in the field of religion. And yes, I am saying that your religion, your company, your church, your political party, your team may just be an idol. And maybe you don't use those language. Maybe you don't even care, right? Who cares? I love it. I love my military. Semper Fi. I love my team. You know, go Broncos, whatever it is. You might think that's harmless, good fun. You might just think this is the team to be on. You know, America, the greatest country in the world, right? Unless you're from another country. You see, I am saying that everything becomes an idol. Now stay with me here. Don't just tune out and say I'm just this anarchist and I've got some weird political agenda, because I don't. And I'm not going where you think I'm going. So stay with me here, okay? Pay attention to how you processed that claim that I just made, that it's a hate crime. Institutional evil is playing on the law of love, right? Are you searching for areas where exclusion is actually wise? I mean, we don't want everybody to become a pilot, do we? Right, we don't want everybody in the military, do we? We can't have everybody leading a company, can we? Right? I mean, there's hierarchies, there's rules, there's protocols for all this, and everybody measures up to a certain level and then they find their place within the institution, right? I mean, you can't get around this. Are you appealing then to an institutional power? You see, this is a very deep root. It's the dandelion with the 3-foot root in your yard. And no matter how hard you pull, it's not coming out that easily. And like most people, you're probably thinking about, well, families are good institutions. And I know some very well-organized teams for sports or military or business or ministry. And people get along great and they work really well together, and the hierarchy serves the industry, the ministry, the work very, very well. How could our world go without such a thing? You're probably thinking of institutions that work by protecting distinctives, right? It's like these things make us, and we don't want to give those up. And it's important, and we don't want to exclude people. We have a process where we can assimilate outsiders and turn them into insiders. Those are called our welcome classes. That's called new student orientation. That's called boot camp. That's called something else, right? It's always a process of assimilation. And you might use assimilation as a way of saying, hey, we're not exclusive. But you cannot get away from the fact that the spirit behind it all separates you from one another. Now, you may not be able to even imagine that there's an alternative out there. Pause for a minute. What's the alternative? If nothing is coming to your mind, then you're just not aware of it, right? It's a blind spot. It's a part to which you're not awakened. But there is an alternative to these kinds of institutional powers. Right. Would you agree, I mean, that freedom from the tyranny of oppressive institutional power is a good thing? And let me just say, I think all institutions have oppression. Why? Because they set up a long list of rules so that everybody can have fair play. But really, the rules just kind of protect those in power, and they keep it harder for people to rise to power. And so oftentimes you have many of the worker bees giving their life and energy away for the sake of the few. And this is not some jab against the one percenters or anything like that, folks. So don't just carve me out, right? That's your tendency to want to create a distinction. You're listening to these words and you're saying, he's not like me. I'm not like him. I have the truth and he doesn't, or he's wrong, or this or that. That's the whole point of what I'm getting at. But wouldn't you agree that if you could be free from that tyranny, that it would be a good thing? It would be good news? Would you agree that if you could recapture your personal power, your personal freedom, instead of just giving it away like a battery, draining it into some institution, or deriving your identity or your power from the institution? Gosh, I'm the CEO. I'm the vice president. I have this. I have social power. I have a Nick Cool title on my business card. Come on. Would you agree that if you could get free of that, that that would be the very definition of freedom, or even the definition of salvation? If so, then you now have a new definition for the word gospel or good news. You see, getting rid of that tyranny is what the focus of the gospel is all about. The story, the Christ story, is all about liberation of the captive. It's setting free the prison, opening the prison doors. It's declaring, you know, the Lord's favor. It's binding up the brokenhearted. It's all these things. And you see, the work of Christ was not to enlist us into another alternative religion. Jesus did not come to establish Christianity so that it could compete against all other religions. It was to liberate all people and all religions. Remember, Jesus was a Jew, and he came through Judaism to show that the religion of Judaism, like all world religions, it's simply archetypical here, is a container, and as a container, it falls short. And that there's a new way of reframing the container so that it benefits people. And of course, the religious people hated it. And once people are freed from their institutions of their family, their social networks, their vocation, their religion, their politics, and their entertainments, they were not intended to simply be free-floating agents in the world. It's not like we're going out of an institution and into just a bunch of autonomous free agents. You see, the freedom from was purposed to make us free toward an alternative organization, an alternative way of relating. And this is an organization where the rules of engagement are entirely opposite of every other institution in the world. In this one, you had to go, in order to go up, you go down. In order to receive, you had to give it away, right? This group is not defined by climbing up to power, but by stooping to serve, right? By building other people up and divesting our own energy for the service of others, we ourselves are built up by the others who are divesting themselves for us. There is to be no competition, right? The differences between us are to be celebrated and appreciated and utilized to make us all greater, not feared, not making, you know, us afraid of the differences as a threat, as an infiltrator, and something that's going to subvert our power, right? Institutional power, yes, it does subvert institutional power. But folks, it's the whole purpose is to make all people more similar than dissimilar, even when you have a difference. Yeah, you may hate the team with the red jersey because you have a blue jersey, but there's nobody on that field more like you than that other team. You see, instead of endless rules, protocols, hierarchies, there was just one rule that everybody is to follow. We can all get one rule, right? And that's the law of love. This group, this alternative, it's not a static institution that looks out for its own interests. It's a dynamic flow. It's a living body, a people that incarnate, the in flesh, the spirit and power of love and inclusion, which really looks out for the interests of others, not its own self-interest, right? The goal is total diversity and total unity all at the same time. That was the design. That was the goal. And that is the biblical definition of the church. And so let me ask you, is that the description of your church? Is that how you understand church? I guarantee you 90% of the people in America do not see the church that way. They do not have a biblical definition. They have a cultural definition. They have a social definition where all the power plays, where the economic, racial, social power is distributed. And so it is nothing like what I'm talking about. You see, true unity combined with diversity can never take place without the inclusion of all others. Do you realize that? You have to have the voice of all people at the table, or you don't have diversity, which is part of the beauty and creative design of the world. Now, I've shown how institutional powers have failed humanity by their exclusivity. I've shown how they have failed humanity by their binary frameworks that violate the law of love. But the flip side of this means that reframing the Christ story is absolutely central to human progress. That's right. It cannot be this story that has kept people out. Right? Any attempt... And so what I mean by that is that so often we've turned Christianity and the Christ story into an alternative religion, and then only certain people are allowed in, and God wants you to be in, but you have to say this certain prayer and you have to do these certain things. You have to join our team. And once you do, then, basically it's the same story as any religion on the world. And a lot of people have grown tired of that. And as a result, they just say, well, I'm going to pursue spirituality, but I'm not doing your Christian thing. Right? But here's the catch. Yes, reframing the Christ story is absolutely central to human progress, but not just for the Christian. Reframing the Christ story is absolutely central to human progress for all people. And any attempt to bypass Jesus puts humanity right back into a competitive, exclusive, tribal religion or institutional framework. You simply cannot get around it. If you do it, if you try and go around it, you're just another, it's the same cake with different frosting. And see, the answer is not found in any world religion. It never was. The answer wasn't found in turning Christianity into a world religion either, because it was never intended to be a world religion. That's simply our default mode of creating institutions around things. You see, regressing back into tribal Christianity is not the answer, nor into any other exclusive religious framework. None of those world religions will get the world any farther than it is today. These things have been around a long time, folks. And where have they got us? All we're doing is throwing rocks over the wall at each other, saying, my team's better than your team. My God can beat up your God. We have real faith. We have a real God. You guys are all dying and going to hell. We're the ones who got it right. It's just more and more of the same. This was the point of Jesus' contention with religious leaders. And so, folks, we cannot build institutions around Jesus when his teachings were subversive to institutional power. The gospel subverts institutional power. The gospel provides another way, which was supposed to be called the church, the living body, the incarnation, the place where the Spirit of God comes back in the flesh, right? But we can't build institutions around Jesus when his teachings were subversive to institutional power. And we can't build institutions without a right understanding of his life and work, which means if you don't understand this alternative that he talked about, you will by default create another institution, which is what the story of, you know, Christian history is all about. And this makes Jesus either the stumbling block to moving forward, or he is understood as the cornerstone for the new world. Isn't that amazing? And those are just what the prophets said he would be, a stumbling block until that time where he becomes the cornerstone for the new world. I think it's time we relook at this story and see exactly what it means again.